if you're a real estate professional and you materially participate in your own direct rental properties that you own and control, and you spend 500 hours doing that, you can group all of your rental activities together as one and includes your syndicate and fund interests. We found $2 million in missed deductions on their prior year tax return that their CPA missed because there was no strategy behind it. We're talking about $2 million of deductions.
What if you could reclaim hours of free time each week, create legacy building wealth, and devote more energy to your passion projects without giving up on your career as a life-saving MD? Dr. Vikram Raya is a functional cardiologist, high-performance coach, and real estate expert, is here to give you the tools, strategies, and solutions you need to transform your life, unlock your limitless potential, and achieve greatness, all while freeing up your precious time. Welcome to Limitless MD. Let's dive in.
All right, guys. Welcome back to Limitless MD. I'm so pumped and excited to meet our next guest, Thomas Castelli. He is not just a real estate CPA. He's not just a guy who lives in one of the most beautiful cities in the country, Miami. He's a freaking kickboxer, so don't want to mess with him in a dark alley. But that being said, if you're a physician, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're someone successful, the number one complaint you have, if I had to guess, is taxes. The number one expense on your P&L is going to be taxes. What if I could show you a way to help offset some of those taxes? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. So Thomas, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Vikram. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's start right away here. I'm not going to play around, Thomas. I have people here who pay six-figure tax bills. I probably show some people on the podcast here who listen who have seven-figure tax bills. What are the top three mistakes that these guys make?
Yeah, I think the first mistake people make is not working with anybody who can help them do tax strategy and planning, right? A lot of CPAs, a lot of firms out there, they'll file your taxes for you. And that's very important, right? Being in compliance with the IRS and making sure that you're filing your taxes definitely keeps you out of jail, right? However, most accounts out there are not giving you any strategic advice on how to actually reduce your taxes and what moves you can make to do that. So I think it's like the first big mistake. It's just not seeking out advice from somebody who could help give you the strategies you need to reduce your taxes. And that's probably number one. Number two is only focusing on the active side of real estate, right? So there's the real estate professional status and short-term rentals, which I'm sure we'll talk about, which can help you reduce taxes on your active income. But I think far too many people look at that as like the end all and be all. And that if you're investing in real estate and you're doing it passively, there's not any tax benefits. Like to just give a quick example. If you're a high income earner and you know, you're at the higher tax brackets, you're paying 37% in taxes, plus state and local, plus FICA, if you have a W-2 or self-employment taxes, if you're self-employed, and you could easily be paying between 40 to 50% in taxes. However, with real estate, the rental income is often sheltered from tax thanks to the depreciation. So if you were to earn, say, an extra $100,000 from your job or your business, you could be paying $40,000 to $50,000 in taxes on it. But if you take the same $100,000 and earn it from rental properties, then all of a sudden you're not paying taxes on that. So it helps reduce your effective tax rate and can be quite powerful. It's not only are you able to shelter the rental income from taxes, but you're also able to shelter the capital gains from taxes using a myriad of strategies to do that. So real estate tends to be very tax efficient, whether you're on the active or on the passive side of the coin. I think people just focus a little bit too much on the active, which can be very powerful. But there's also benefits in being passive. The third one, some people, or maybe it's a misconception, is looking, maybe from what I've seen this in the FIRE community too, is thinking that earned income is bad, or I need to reach retirement early for maybe the wrong reasons, right? Being financially free is awesome, and that's one thing. But I think too many people, they get to early retirement and then don't know what to do next, right? And the reality is, yes, earned income can be highly taxed, but it can help propel you into having the resources to make substantial investments in things like real estate and other businesses, which can help you grow your wealth.
Absolutely. You know, and the other thing is a lot of people realize, yeah, their W-2 has some challenges, but there's also some benefits. I mean, to be able to qualify for loans that can help them grow their medical business, their practices, their buy investment properties. They can do a lot with having that W-2, which is essentially a badge of a good credit for a lender. So I think be strategic about FIRE, which stands for financially independent, retire early.
Yeah, financial independence, retire early. I have a term, financial independence, retire never, but that's another story. But yeah, no, you're 100%. Yeah. It's you're 100% on the money though. Having a W-2 makes it a lot easier to qualify for financing, which is weird how the bank works, because sometimes being self-employed, in my opinion, maybe is more safe in some cases than W-2. But whatever, it works. So,
all right. So, look, you're part of Hall CPA. You're really seeing at the forefront of so many people coming in, filing their taxes. A lot of times you take over from other CPAs and, you know, people who you just used to use H&R Block and things like that.
Yeah.
What is a tax strategist different than a CPA or a bookkeeper? Or, you know, tell me about the levels within this field.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So there's a few different levels here. There's a tax preparer. A tax preparer takes all the numbers and all the information from the money you made this year or in any given year and furnishes it and puts it into a software and then files your taxes for you. Basically, your tax return is like a report card of all the income losses, deductions, et cetera, that you did from the prior year. That's very important because you need to stay compliant with the IRS and not get into trouble. But what a tax strategist does is they look at your situation, usually before the year ends, ideally before the year ends, and says, okay, here's the moves you can make this year and perhaps sometimes even years in advance to make sure that you're going to position yourself to come out with a reduced tax liability or to optimize your tax liability rather than just filing the return, right? So that when you do file the return, the numbers and the information that go in there are giving you a better outcome than if you had not done it. So to answer the question, a tax strategist basically helps you plan proactively to reduce taxes. That's what they do. And then bookkeepers are a little bit different. Bookkeepers are keeping track of the financial transactions that you're doing, the income, the expenses that you have. And that's critical because that not only gets reported on your tax return, but helps you understand and is key to maximizing your deductions, but also helps you understand the health of your business, right? Are you profitable? Are certain expenses higher than normal for your business or your industry? Just really helps you optimize the financial picture. And also that information is necessary also to get lending in many cases. So the bookkeeper basically keeps records of the financial transactions. The tax preparer files your tax returns for you each year, and the tax strategist helps you make moves to actually reduce your tax liability. That's pretty much what they do.
Okay. So as someone becomes more advanced in their investments and they have a diversity of income streams, eventually a tax strategist is probably important as part of their professional power team.
Yeah, absolutely. Because as things get more advanced, you're going to be paying a lot higher. You're usually going to be making more income, which leads to higher taxes. And when you're in business and real estate, there's a ton of opportunities for tax savings if you know what to do and how to position yourself in the right position to capture those tax benefits, which is what a strategist will help you do.
Let's just be outright here, Thomas, because I don't want to beat around the bush. Let's say I want to use a tax strategist. I've seen people charge me a couple $100. Someone charged me a couple $1,000. Some people go, you know, $5K to even $10K. Like, why do most people get so worked up about that kind of fee, but then are okay with paying the big, sometimes tax bills? And like, it seems like penny wise, pound foolish. Help me wrap my head around that.
Yeah, and oftentimes it can be. And yeah, that's a great question, because the thing is, most CPAs, they just file your tax returns. You're used to paying them a fee to file your tax returns, but they don't give advice. And you know, to your point earlier, we speak to a lot of prospective clients here at Hall CPA, and almost every time they come to us, they often say, my CPA files my tax returns, but they never give me any advice on how to reduce my taxes. And that's because you know, at the end of the day, that takes time, effort, energy, and experience to be able to help somebody do. And they usually don't, the other CPAs don't have it. So they're charging for a tax return. And now all of a sudden you want to work with a tax strategist. There's a cost associated with that, right? It can't be done for free, right? It's you can't work for free, right? So it is, it is a cost, and in many cases, it's a worthy cost because, like, just to give you an example, one of our clients who started working with us, we found $2 million in missed deductions on their prior year tax return that their CPA missed because there was no strategy behind it. Wow. We're talking about $2 million of deductions. I mean, we have so many stories about this. Just to give just some other ones, like these, this is just stuff that happens. Okay, here's another one. So the other CPA elected out of bonus depreciation. So when you elect out of bonus depreciation, it's irrevocable. You cannot go back and fix it once you elect out. And that costs them hundreds of thousands of dollars in this tax deductions because their CPA didn't have the experience to strategize with them. I mean, and these are just two instances. It's like another one that you can, if you're a real estate professional and you materially participate in your own direct rental properties that you own and control, and you spend 500 hours doing that, you can group all of your rental activities together as one and includes your syndicate and fund interests. And this one couple, their CPA did not make that grouping election for them. And it cost them $135,000 roughly in missed tax savings because that election was never made. They didn't know they could do it. So okay. These are just instances.
I'm seeing a trend here. I'm seeing like, it's not intentional or anything like that. These are all well-meaning individuals and professionals, but having that comprehensive tax code knowledge and really realizing, hey, look, what are the opportunities here? What are the patterns that we've seen are successful in other, you know, individuals or entrepreneurs? How can we apply that to your case? And just, you know, you're going to pay taxes, but just maximizing the deductions that are allowable under, you know, the tax code for the optimization of profit and take home pay.
No, exactly. It's exactly what it is.
I want to talk about, you know, the elephant in the room. Everyone wants reps. People sometimes understand what that is. Sometimes they don't. And they want to talk about, you know, bonus depreciation. And then as an appetizer or as a dessert, we can talk about SDR. So I'll let you navigate all three topics. But let's sort of open all that up. And we don't need to go into a whole discourse of what's reps, what's not. I think they can look that up. But just in general, how to approach it all.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the way you want to look at this is when you're investing in real estate, you're either going to be passive or non-passive as far as taxes are concerned. What happens if you're passive, what that means is the losses that you're generating from real estate. And I won't go into a huge deep dive, but oftentimes the losses that are generated from real estate are from depreciation, which is a non-cash expense that only exists on paper. So in other words, you could be telling the IRS, hey, I'm losing money despite the fact that you're generating positive cash flow. So that's just what I mean by losses. Sometimes people say, I don't want to lose money. Well, we don't want to actually lose money, but thanks to depreciation, you're creating these losses.
So now, when you're passive, paper losses, you're trying to say paper losses that are allowed by the IRS that come in the form of bonus depreciation that we can use to offset the rental income or whatever income from the property.
Right. And when you're passive, it's going to offset your rental income, often bring your rental income to zero or below. And then if you have any other, if beyond that, it can help you offset income from other rental properties you have and capital gains from other rental properties. So that's what happens when you're in the passive world. And what that does is it actually helps reduce your effective tax rate because you're making more money, but you're not paying taxes on it. You're not paying additional taxes. So it's very nice. But then there's the non-passive side, which if you're a real the way to get on the non-passive side is the real estate professional status, which basically effectively requires you to work full time in real estate, either you or your spouse if you're filing a joint return. And then those losses become non-passive, and you could take those losses and use it to offset your W-2 business and other forms of non-passive income. And that can be quite powerful in itself. So when you combine that with bonus depreciation, and what bonus depreciation allows you to do is rapidly accelerate your depreciation expenses to create these outsized losses to help you significantly reduce your taxes. So that is pretty much the way that you want to approach it. It's either you're going to be able to go active and manage your own portfolio and be able to, someone in your relationship is going to be able to do work full-time in real estate, or you're going to be on the passive side. Both kind of have different outcomes, but both have tax benefits.
And then for those of you who are interested in short-term rentals as a tax strategy, can you just sort of lay out the strategy, lay out the reasons why, and lay out maybe the cautionary tale?
Yeah, absolutely. So within the tax code, there's a carve out for short-term rental properties that was originally intended for hotels and motels that says that your rental property, your short-term rental, is not actually a rental property, which can be passive by default, like we've been discussing, but it's actually a business. And again, it was more for like hotels and motels when this was written. But when you move this into the business bucket, you no longer need to qualify as a real estate professional and effectively work full-time in real estate. You only need to meet one of three material participation tests. So the way it works is you need to first meet an exception to the definition of rental activity. And there's typically two ways short-term rental investors will do this. Either have an average stay of 7 days or less for the year on your property, or 30 days or less from providing substantial services, which are like hotel-like services, daily cleaning, meals, things like that. Most people go for 7 days or less. So once you meet one of those, now you need to materially participate. Seven material participation tests, three of them are going to be most relevant to like 90% of people. And that's going to be either spend 500 hours or more on your short-term rental, or you do substantially everything yourself, which means you're like a one-person show, or you spend more than 100 hours and no one else spends more time than you. That one's by far the most popular test, because it allows you to delegate to cleaners and repair people and still kind of run point on the operation. And one more thing on that is unlike the real estate professional status, to qualify as a real estate professional, one spouse must meet the requirements. In this instance, with short-term rentals, both spouses' time are combined. So for example, in the 100-hour test, one could spend 51, the other one could spend 49, and you hit 100 hours, you're good. So it makes it it's a lot easier to qualify for, is what I'm trying to say, than the real estate professional status. And then that's kind of the benefit and how it works and why it's easier, right? Now, the cautionary tale of short-term rentals is that short-term rentals are a little bit more of an intense business to run, a more active business, because you have to deal with pricing, you have to deal with tenants or guests coming in and out on a more frequent basis, which ends up leading to more repairs and more maintenance fees. And then on top of that, it's a little bit more of a competitive market in terms of you have to make sure you're buying the right location, and then where you're buying, your property's optimized, you have the right pictures on Airbnb, and that you're doing things right. And there's also it's still somewhat the Wild Wild West out there, and there's still a lot of regulations coming into certain markets. And that could be problematic. For example, New York, I think last year they banned short-term rentals unless you're going to be present at the property. And there's been other counties and stuff throughout the country that do this. So usually you want to look for markets that are already regulated, so you don't have to be surprised when the regulation does come. But it's a little bit more of an active business, and you have to just be prepared to play a more active role, especially in the first year.
All right, man. This is amazing. The combined of the spouses, that was something new for me that I learned. So that's really good. And I like sort of know thy regulations, because this is a state-by-state kind of game you have to learn. Yeah. And then the fact that it's really more of a business versus a real estate play. So just having the wherewithal to run that. Now, that being said, I know a lot of physicians and a lot of entrepreneurs who are very successful running their STRs. And so if you really like it, this could be a very good vehicle. So before I get into this big, beautiful tax bill, what's some cool information? So maybe some, I hate to call it tax hacks, but what are some things unknown or little known, like, the Augusta rule, for example, or a few of these other things that people can just use by listening to this episode?
So I could go through the Augusta rule. I think there's another one called the partial asset disposition that we'll talk about with rental real estate. But the Augusta rule basically allows you to rent out your home tax free. And it was originally designed for the Masters tournament. So people basically allows you to rent your home tax free for 2 weeks, right? So if you do it for 14 days or less, you don't have to report the income, you don't report the expenses, you put the money in your pocket, you go away. Now, what ends up happening is you can use this for your business. So you can rent your home to your business. Your business will receive a tax deduction for the rental of the home. So you'll be taking a little bit of tax savings there, and you'll be receiving the income tax free on the opposite side. So it's a nice little tax hack. I think it's a little overrated in my humble opinion. There's a lot of things a lot more powerful than that, but that's one tax hack a lot of people do take advantage of. And if it's something you can do, power to you there. One thing I think is often overlooked in real estate, though, is something called a partial asset disposition. And what happens is when you own a piece of real estate, you're going to depreciate that real estate usually over 27 and a half years for a residential property or 39 years for commercial. And yes, certain things can be accelerated with bonus depreciation, but there's still always going to be a good portion that's going to be still depreciated over 27 and a half years. For example, the roof, the HVAC system, and other structural components. What happens is if you renovate the HVAC system, say you pull the old HVAC system out and you replace it, well, normally you're still depreciating the old HVAC system, right, as part of the property. And now you're depreciating the new HVAC system. But what a partial asset disposition allows you to do is take the remaining value of that old HVAC, and instead of depreciating over 27 and a half years, little by little, you're taking that entire value and deducting it in the year you replaced it, which can be quite powerful. It goes for roofs and other windows and other major renovations on your property. I think this is often overlooked. And to give you an example, one of our clients took a $15,000 deduction when they replaced one of their plumbing systems. Another one was a $12,000 deduction when they replaced their roof. And there was another one, I think it was $10,000 for an HVAC. And these are just like little minor examples, but this is partial asset dispositions allow you to basically create a lot of losses as you're renovating your property. It's something that people just overlook, and we've seen it be quite powerful.
I like that. I'm gonna talk to my team about that, man. I like that, partial asset dispositions. That's powerful. All right, let's get into this new tax bill. Everyone's wanting to know, is bonus depreciation coming back? Is 100% coming back?
It looks like it. It looks like it. So the big, beautiful bill, as it's being called, did pass through the House, and 100% bonus depreciation would be back starting January 19th, 2025 through the end of December. So December 31st, 2029. So basically the next 4 years, give or take. And it's very likely to pass at this point. You know, it's probably like a 98% chance, because it's one of the less costly provisions in the bill, comparatively to all the other things that are in there. And it really does help spur the economy. So at this point, I would say I can't guarantee it's going to come back, but it looks highly likely that 100% bonus depreciation is coming back.
That's awesome.
Which is
That's
big
awesome.
News.
And does that make real estate even more of a strategic play for many individuals across the United States?
Yeah, absolutely. And we expect a lot of money to come into real estate as a result of this. Because, like, just to give you an example of this, I know we didn't go through this in this episode yet. So say you buy a $500,000 property. We're just going to keep it relatively mild, although it can be more powerful the bigger properties. Usually you're going to depreciate the building, and say the building is 80% of that, $400,000. Now, when you do a cost segregation study, breaks down the various components in your property and says, here's the breakdown. There's different class lives. There's 27 and a half year or 39 year for commercial. There's 15 year, which is land improvements. There's 7 years, which is basically like undetermined. And then there's 5 year, which is tangible personal property, things like faucets and carpeting and appliances. And usually somewhere between 20 to 30% of that building value can be reallocated to this 5, 7, and 15 year property, which is all eligible for bonus depreciation. So on this property, let's say you have a $500,000 property, $400,000 is a building. If we take 25% of that, say that's all eligible for bonus depreciation, that's $100,000. Now, under the current law, as it stands today, as of this recording, we're at 40% bonus depreciation. So that means that you'd get a $40,000 deduction, which is nice. But under 100% bonus depreciation, you're getting a $100,000 deduction in the first year you buy the property. And if you're at the 37% tax bracket, that's $37,000 in tax savings. And so it can be quite powerful. The bigger the properties you buy, the more powerful it is. I know this one client that we had bought a $2 million beach home and ended up saving something like, I think it was like $200,000 in taxes or something like that. And it was very powerful. So that's bonus depreciation. And if it comes back at 100%, you're seeing a lot more demand for real estate.
That's awesome. What are a couple of other things in the bill that are keeping you excited?
Yeah, some other things in the bill, and I think this is often overlooked, is the SALT cap. Well, this one's not overlooked. The SALT cap, this got a lot of attention. The SALT cap is important. The SALT cap is being increased from $10,000 to $40,000. So state and local income taxes, if you live in a high income state like New York or California or high property tax state, they ended up capping the deduction you can take. So against your federal income taxes at $10,000 during the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. But in this bill, they're moving it back to, they're moving it up to $40,000, which will be a big deal for high income earners. And then also, if you own a business, the qualified business income deduction was set to expire soon. And that's a 20% deduction on your business income that you can take. And they're actually increasing that from 20 to 23%. So it went from about to expire to actually being increased a little bit, which is nice for people who are who do have businesses. And this does apply to real estate too. Also, some other things in there, the tax rates were set to go back to their original brackets, which had a highest tax bracket of 39.6%. And they actually took the tax brackets and put them back where they should be, with inflation adjustments. So these are just little things that are going on in there. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Qualified opportunity zones, there's a revamp coming up there where their tax benefits are going to be extended there a little bit. I think that's a big one for some people who are investing in like the lower income housing neighborhoods and like to do those renovations. So that's some big things coming in the bill that people need to be aware of.
Dude, that was a really good run through. I'm excited. I think it's a good bill for real estate in general and for investors. So we hope that these key parts, at least hopefully they pass. That being said, man, it's been a wealth of knowledge. And this is just me and you just having a nice chit chat for about 30, 40 minutes. I'm assuming that, you know, if this has been helpful for our listeners, they'd want to go a little bit deeper dive. I think Limitless MD and Hall CPA have come up with something special. You want to share a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have tax planning engagements, which can help you build a custom tax plan, help you reduce taxes. And if you come through Limitless MD, you'll get a free 30-minute discovery call to learn more about your situation and how we can help you, as well as you'll have $500 off your engagement with us when you follow the link, which I believe is go.therealestatecpa.com/limitless.
So that's go.realestatecpa, all one word, .com/limitless. Okay. And that will be obviously in the show notes, guys, for you listeners. But man, Thomas, it's been phenomenal. Great advice, great information. What's the last one or two books you've been reading?
The last book that I read was actually The Daily Laws I read this every day, actually, because it's like one passage a day by Robert Greene.
Nice.
He's a writer of a lot of books, 48 Laws of Power, 33 Strategies of War, and other ones. Very interesting read. So I just read that every day. And then the last book before that, I think it might have been The Essays of Warren Buffett.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a great bit, like, believe it or not only a great investment book, it's a great business book. Yeah. And I think the way he looks at business is very logical and straightforward. And it's just a phenomenal book. So I have to suggest it to anybody who's in business or investing. So
Thomas, thank you so much, my friend. It was great having you at the Limitless MD Retreat as one of our speakers. It's great that you and Brandon have been the supporter of our stuff, and we've helped support you guys. It's been a nice collaboration. I'm hoping that a lot of people will take you up on your discovery calls and get a second opinion on what's going on with their taxes. With that being said, listeners, thank you so much. Really appreciate you. Thank you for supporting the podcast. Thank you for supporting the YouTube. It really means a lot. Tell your friends, share the episode if you like it. And with that being said, until next time, be phenomenal.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Limitless MD. If you found value from this episode, I encourage you to share this episode with a friend and let me know by leaving a review. For more information, make sure you check out the links in the show notes below or simply visit vikramraya.com. Until next time, be phenomenal.